Well, today I have something a little different. Some time back, somebody said to me, why don't you, and this was a person of foreign extraction, so they had a little different view of the way we view things, and said, you know, you should talk about the roots of the church, the roots, the history, the background, so that the young people and the new people and the older people can have it kind of reviewed, so they have in mind that it's not just something flighty. There's some substance behind the church. So that kind of, and then some other people mentioned it, so it kind of inspired me to put something together. So when I speak about the church, I'm not talking about ancient history. I'm talking about the old worldwide Church of God. And I always make a distinction between the old and the new. Now, I haven't had a chance to review Mr. Hopkinson's disc, so I hope this is not going to be repetitious. If it is repetitious in any way, please go out and get a Starbucks and bring me one back too, okay? So this is not a sermon about Helgi. I'm going to speak about the history of the worldwide Church of God from the time I got out there. And it's not about myself, but I'm going to talk about my perspective. You see, the way I saw things, so to some degree, that's the only way I'm going to be included in this. So I'm going to talk about our roots in the worldwide Church of God, and so that will help us to know what our roots are. Two, it will bring a spiritual lesson, and we'll be able to draw something from that spiritual lesson at the end. And three, to let you know that the people who were out there and directly involved in proclaiming the gospel were human beings. They were just people with faults, good points and bad points. But you see, God was working through them to proclaim the gospel, and sometimes in spite of us. Okay? So again, God gets the glory as to what went on. So to commence, I'll start the background where I was in Chicago practicing law. I heard the broadcast. I wrote in, the usual story many of you have. And one day, a minister came out to visit me. We talked, we went to lunch, and I said to him, this would be great. Mr. Armstrong's on the radio. Why don't we just kind of write all over and get the people to assemble every Sabbath and they can hear the radio like it's a sermon? He says, oh, we do have churches. So that kind of surprised me. Can I come? Can I be invited? I wanted to learn God's word. I really wanted to know about God. I don't want to go into the history as to why or anything. So he invited me, and that's where it all started, going to Wozniak Hall, a Polish hall out there in Chicago. It was dirty. The windows were dirty. One of the windows, I remember, was half falling down. And I thought, if I ever become a member of this church, the first thing I'm going to do is wash the windows. So finally, one day, just out of the blue, he says to me, Helgi, have you ever thought about attending Ambassador College? Wow. I had thought about it and thought, no, you're too old, you're out in your practice, you've made your bed, lie in it, see? And so, wow, I can learn about God's word right out there from Mr. Armstrong. I said, well, no, I haven't. I thought it was a dead horse. No, do it. File your application. Go ahead, do it. Oh, great, I'll do it. I file my application, right? Time goes by. 1 month before college starts, no word. 3 weeks. No word. 2 weeks? No. Right down to the hilt? No word. Find it the day before, the letter. Whoa, here it is. No, it's a coworker letter. Not a word. Wasn't accepted. Wasn't rejected there from the letter. So what in the world happened? Mr. Blackwell, he was nonplussed. Can't understand why he didn't get something. So to jump ahead in the story a little bit, Dr. Hay told me later that application was sent up to Mr. Armstrong because lawyers were very, very sparse in the church, if there were any at that time, and it went to him for review. and he rejected it. He says, but Mr. Helge, he lost the application. So he said, Mr. Armstrong rejected you, but God overruled him. So that was always kind of cute. So Mr. Blackwell arranged a meeting. He said, go to the Feast of Tabernacles down in Texas, and I'll arrange to have you meet Mr. Armstrong there. So I did. So I met Mr. Armstrong for the first time, and it was just very interesting. He talked, you know, Mr. Armstrong never just had you sit down and boom, let's talk about the problem. No, he would go, you know, all the way around the issues, you see. So he talking, we have some legal problems occasionally, and then he tells me the story about the radio manager they had who wasn't in the church, and they would, you know, pay thousands and thousands of dollars to him, and he was supposed to pay the stations. Well, this guy put it in his pocket instead and didn't pay the stations. So he says, what I did then, he said, I made a luncheon appointment with him and had it arranged with my attorney to serve him a summons while we were having lunch. I thought, Kathy, this guy is really gutsy. You know what I mean? Invite the guy to lunch to, you know, execute him, see? I thought, this guy is pretty gutsy. So we talked, and then he said, okay, Mr. Helge, I want you to come out. I want you to come out to the college. Well, that was fine, great. You can come out right after the feast. I said, well, Mr. Armstrong, I got to go back. I got some clients. I got to kind of disengage from a law practice. Well, Mr. Helge, if you're not interested, you know, he had a beautiful way of just putting it right into your ribs, you see. But it was arranged I was going to come out in mid-December. So December 24, Christmas Eve, in a snowstorm, I got into the car and started to drive Route 66 out to heaven, right? Out to Pasadena. I was really excited about the new opportunities that lay out there in this massive campus and so on. So when I finally get to Pasadena, I say, pardon me, where's Ambassador College? Ambassador College, I don't know. You don't know. But pardon me, sir, where's Ambassador College? I don't know. Never heard of it. What? This big, massive, thundering college and no one heard of it? So finally, the word, I think that's over, down here, Orange Grove, you turn, you go here, and so on. So finally I did, and I finally found it. It was a little tiny side street, I drove by it probably six times trying to find it. Drove down there, little tiny driveway going up, three cars. No academic buildings, homes. Well, this is not exactly what I expected. A little odd. Is this the place, I wonder? I forget what it was called, 363 or something, Grove Street. Grove was the name. I couldn't think of the name. Grove. So I walk in there, and there's two girls there, students, and this is a room, you know, converted for an office use, and they're on the floor. They're on the floor with big, long sheets of paper, and they're working on Dr. Hayes' history class, you know, history. So they're working, well, ghastly, you know. You're supposed to be secretaries up here, you know, and meeting and so on. So I said, well, you know, I'm here and so on, and, yes. Well, what am I supposed to, where do I go? What am I supposed to do? You know, I just drove out here three nights and 4 days, whatever it was. Well, I don't know. Well, maybe what you want is a campus tour. And the last thing I wanted was a campus tour. But they took me on it. So then I ended up in Manor Del Mar. So I was there only for a short while, and Dr. Hay invited me to stay at his home. So I had a very nice room up in the corner. If you drive by Orange Grove, it's the corner home on Del Mar and Orange Grove. It was the, I forget, the left or the right side facing Orange Grove. It was a big room, almost like a little studio apartment, and a big bathroom, you know, with the tile like the old type, and a big bathtub. Big bathtub. So it was very nice, and that was a real blessing because Dr. Hay, it gave me an opportunity to talk to him on a daily basis many times. And sometime in the evening, he'd come down, knock on the door, and he'd come down with some of his treats. And we opened up, oh, Dr. Hay, I'm going to chat, you know, and And what were the treats? Well, one time I remember very clearly, he has this little tin can, opens it up, and it's roast grasshoppers. See? Grasshopper, you know, no. I said, I'm sorry. No, please, no, go ahead. No, thank you. And I remember the next time, it was wine made from violet. And it tasted like acid, and it smelled like tennis shoes. I mean, it was just horrible, you know. But that's what he'd do, or he'd bring up some of his famous cheeses, and you could smell them as they came down the hallway, you see what I mean? But that was always a blessing to be able to talk to Dr. Hay and his wife. His wife was very nice and congenial, except when I was always good. We got these little Fig Newton bars, and they're made with whole wheat. So, you know, it was whole wheat. Obviously, it was sent from heaven like manna, and I would give it to the kids. And finally, she had to tell me, please don't give those to the kids. You know, I thought I was doing them a favor, but no, there was too much sugar in them. So this was the way we approached things there. So then another time I was talking to Mr. Armstrong. I was invited to talk to him during the feast. This was kind of interesting, just little side points that showed how things went there. And we're talking during the feast, and in one door comes Mrs. Armstrong. And she has about five women with her. And you know, remember the Music Man where they got the chickens going peck, 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 remember that? Well, that's what it was. Peck, 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 coming out. And all of a sudden, without missing a beat, she stops. Herbert, it's just too cold in here. And she goes over, poof, turns down the thermostat, and we're out the door. Peck, 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 peck. You know, out. And Mr. Armstrong, he sits up, he's indignant. But, you know, everything's passed by him. It went so fast, he didn't get a chance to respond. So he gets up, turns the thermostat back down, says, Mr. Helge, those women will just run your life if you let them. Run your life. He just didn't like that at all. Then we used to have ministerial meetings. Once a year, they'd bring in all the more ministers who were more experienced in the field, and they'd bring them into Pasadena from all over. It was a beautiful experience then. Because they would come in, and we'd have a nice big dinner there in the dining room, and everybody would meet and talk. And you see, what they would discuss, the interest, they would discuss doctrine. Why? Because you see, all the doctrine wasn't put together yet. And they would talk and say, well, now, Mr. Armstrong, this man wants to take this heart medicine. Well, what's it made of? And back and forth to determine whether or not this was natural. Now, we're off track, I feel, but nevertheless, it would be discussed. What can you have to tithe on? What don't you have to tithe on? All the spiritual questions. So that, you see, the mentality of the work. They wanted to do things according to the Bible. That was the idea. The Bible was going to be the guide. And that's why they came out to talk and discuss. So that was very helpful. Then on one occasion there, that Mr. Jack Elliott, he's one of the ministers and members out in Texas, very dedicated man to Mr. Armstrong. He was in charge of buildings and grounds. And Mr. Armstrong was kind of talking. He says, Mr. Elliott, it's very cold in here. Would you go down, please, and turn down the air conditioner? So Jack runs out, comes back. Well, did you do it? No, I'm sorry, sir. We can't turn it down. What? What? You can't turn it down? We can't control it? It's a monster controlling us? Get an axe! Kill it! Kill it! So that was kind of amusing there at the time. So, but you see, some things were not as... then there was the occasion when Mr. Armstrong would go to Palm Springs. Now, I was from Chicago. Palm Springs, to me, is Florida. Far away, you know. Long trip. He's gone. And he was gone maybe for a couple of weeks. And I'm new out there, so I'm thinking, well, you know, he's probably retired. He's kind of gone off now, and we're probably not going to hear from him again. And this son, the young guy, he's going to be up there, and he'll be taking over. And I've kind of set my mind, this looks like the way things are going. But Mr. Armstrong comes back, and I'll tell you, the first sermon he gives, I was convinced who was in charge. There was no doubt. There was no doubt he wasn't retired. And I could just see, this man had charisma. When he walked in a room, you knew there was something different. You felt it. So anyway, that taught me that this man was in charge. Now, things were not always as expected. I did not expect to get up at 5 o'clock or 5:30, what it was, every morning, and go out to the exercise track. But that was the routine. And you'd go out there, you'd do push-ups, you'd do sit-ups, you'd do jumping jacks, and then you'd run around the track until they built it up when we were running for a mile. A mile! I tell you, this was work and effort. Mr. Garm's always got these old PTs and these envoys. Look, you wonder why everybody's so gaunt. That's why. That's why. Then you had to get dressed, go back to the dorm, get dressed, and this is where the bathtub, I had to put hot water in the bathtub so I could jump right in, come out, get dressed, and get to the breakfast hall, because if you weren't there on time, they had a window to just roll down, that's it, no breakfast. So it taught you to move. You learn to move. Now, working in the kitchen was Annie Mann, Myrtle Horn, Mr. Bill Homburger. He was one of the workers on the grounds. All very, very dedicated people. And I tell you, humble and real saints. And they're all dead now. So I went to class. Went to class, and boy, this is going to be interesting. Here I want to learn. Now we're going to go verse, word by word, verse by verse. I thought, great, boy, I'll really learn here about the book of Daniel. Instead, zip, five chapters, one class. What in the world is this? We're talking about feathers, and we're talking about 1,450 days and 30 days, you divide it by three, she comes up with so many years. What in the world is all this about, see? I was just nonplussed. Then I looked at the campus. When you opened up the envoy, you see it was a master of Mr. Armstrong's experience of selling. Because you thought, well, here's a big campus. When you get out there, you find it wasn't contiguous at all. We had a building here, then we had a building there, then we had a building, somewhere else, and somebody else owned the intervening properties. So, this was, and then there were shacks, all these broken down shacks, okay? We'd run around that track, it was a dirt track, and they'd be cooking this bacon every morning, and just nauseating as you ran by it, you see. But that's what they had. And one of these shacks was used as dormitories. So when I took my tour, I went through a shack. I thought, ghastly. Am I going to have to stay here? There wasn't even a door in the bathroom, only a curtain. I thought, man, I hope I don't have to stay here. See, but that's what they had. That's what the beginning was. The beginning was just whatever they could pull together. And the students were talking about a dance. And the students said, boy, I sure hope we get paid before the dance. I thought, well, get paid before the dance? What do you mean get paid before the dance? When's the dance? Saturday night? When's payday? Friday? I said, well, what are you talking about? Get paid before the dance. And they all roared in laughter. Why? Because, you see, nobody got paid. They went without checks for months. Sometimes they went without a check for 3 months. And it wasn't bad for a student. You still got fed. If they didn't pay you, you didn't have to pay your dormitory expense, right? But for the workers, the men who were married and had families, they were having cars repossessed, taken out from under them, because they didn't get paid, because the money didn't come in. And you see how dedicated the people were. So I always, look back on that and seeing that's what really kept the work going, that God used people with dedication, with dedication. Now, and also, you see, they weren't quite as sophisticated as they became later. Then they used for some authorities, like National Enquirer, right? Here it is. Hitler not dead, Hitler alive. Oh, let's print that and put that up somehow, you see, as though it was authority. Then also, you see, here we had a big major work, right? People, you know, all around the country, some in foreign countries, mailing in money, mailing in information, and what did they have? I walked into one time into the office there, and I looked, and I was shocked. What are all these old wooden cabinets with little tiny drawers, right? Little drawers. Little 3x5 drawers, you know, about 2 foot long, and they get big, long rows of them. What world is this? Oh, that's our filing system for members. You see, you send in a check, you know, for 10, 15 bucks. They pull it out under K, look through the cards, K, KA, so oh, here it is. Pull it out, write down $10 on it, put the card back, hopefully in alphabetical order. You didn't put enough, you know, you were lost. They couldn't find you. In fact, they never had found my card and told me when I was baptized. So Mr. Blackwell always threatened me. He blackmailed me all the time. He said, I'm going to tell him I never baptized you. That's what I had to live under. But that's all they had. Then to put your name on, they had black and white plain truth at that time. That's all it was. And to put your name on there, you didn't know the effort. See, they had a great big massive machine there, and some student would be typing in, and the machine would go, boom, and it would shake the whole building. And then, boom, type the next name. That machine was stamping everything on a metal tag that they would file, and that would print the name on the plain truth. But you see how archaic things were to start with. That's how bad they were to start with. It was painstaking. See, then when you wanted to send it out, co-worker letter going out came to the students. Oh, great. The word's going to go out. Wonderful. What do we do? All the students volunteered, and they'd go down to the old mortuary's old mortuary building. They'd have them all there, and they'd sit, and they'd fold each one meticulously, put it in an envelope, seal it, and put it in the mail. That's the way the co-worker letters and membership letters went out, by hand, by the students, all trying to do their part. Every letter that came in, remember you always said, please put down your, the station to which you're listening. See, when that came in, it would go to mail receiving, they'd cut it open, take out the money, right on the envelope. It's called mail reading, because they would mark on there where this was supposed to go. You see, send plain truth, send good news, personal letter needed, whatever it is. Then they would pass this off to letter answering, and letter answering would accumulate these and answer them. They would give them to the different students that were more advanced in answering them, and they would sit there and dictate, and the girls in the typing pool would type them up. And that was under Dr. Zimmerman, who today, unfortunately, is in the hospital with a stroke out in Phoenix. There was John Wilson. Now, John Wilson has died. He was in World War II, and half his hand was blown off. When he first landed on the beach, he went up, put his hand in the landmine, and it blew up. And Gary Cefak was there. He's out, I think, in Kentucky now. Oh, and Will Berg, he's another minister in the church today, having a good life up there in Jackson Hole. And so these were good men and dedicated men, and were doing a big part there. You see, and Mrs. Armstrong, at the beginning of this, when I got out there, she would read every single letter that came out of mail writing, the letter answering department. They'd all stack up, and she would read them one at a time to make sure they were doctrinally correct. Now, obviously, you can see that really kind of caused a bottleneck. It was a problem. Finally, Mr. Armstrong realized that, and then the letters went directly out. But at first, that's how small the work was. And it was building. It was next to nothing, unknown to a large degree. And as I say, the people would write in. They'd want to know about the work. They'd have to wait till the summer A student will be sent out there and to talk to them and to baptize them if they felt they were ready. And that's the way the work gradually built. More and more white mail came in. The money went down, the money would go up. The money would go down, and when it went up, it wasn't big oil, just what you needed. But when it went down, word came out, students, the money's down, right? Fast. A fast was called. They closed that window at the cafeteria, and if you wanted to fast or not, you fasted. And then Mr. Armstrong sent out the co-worker letter. Every time it went down, brethren, we need money. Here's what's happening. And pretty soon, every time, the money came in. The money came in. They may have missed deadlines on paying bills, but the money always came when it was needed. You see, these things encouraged me as to God being active in the work and being there. This was the work of God and not the work of men. I had a little problem there, a work problem. I was invited out, to come to the college, and Mr. Cole, one of the ministers there, again, who's now deceased, said, oh, great, Helgi, boy, we can really use you there. We're working on this selective service stuff there. Boy, good, come on out and we'll work. So where is his office? Now, his office was, I told you, at this mortuary building. The first floor is where they mailed out everything. The second floor was letter answering. Now, I'm going to talk a little later, but you see, that was kind of sacrosanct, okay? That was kind of the holy of holies. See, because when you got up there, you were on the ministerial track. So here Helgi comes in, and rather than work through a whole system of cleaning toilets and mopping floors, goes right to that second floor. So I'm working with him. Boy, we're working diligently. He's just a great man, a real depth of Bible knowledge. One day he tells me, Helgi, yeah, don't come back to work, please. Don't come back. Why? Well, I just can't really tell you. Well, no, what do you mean don't come back to work? You're telling me not to come back. Why? Well, it seems that there's objections. And I know the source. I know the source. I know I can tell you the source today. Why? Because it's the same policies that were being implemented, you see. Well, because you started too high. See, you didn't go through the ritual of cleaning toilets, mopping floors. You just started on that right up there in the Holy of Holies. So don't come back. Well, okay. So I don't. He says, we'll call you. Don't call us. So I don't do anything. And one day, Dr. Ray, again, who is one of the ministers, now deceased, invites me out to go to San Diego. And during that time, he said, well, Helgi, what are you doing to get the gospel out? I said, doing nothing. I'm just waiting. Just waiting. Waiting for the call. No, they're waiting on you. Well, okay. So I then say, well, you know, well, what can I do to help get the gospel out? So I'm taken in, and they put me in a table in a corner licking stamps, putting stamps on envelopes that go out to the people who would view the broadcast or listen to the broadcast and make sure all the time was given to it. So that was kind of my purgatory that you have to go through. As I say, this was the policy, and it was not the best policy, but it's the way it was. And Dr. Kuhn came out here. He had a doctor's degree. He's about 20 years old only, already had his doctor's degree in the brain concept, whatever it was called at that time. And he was put in loading mail on trucks. You see, you had to go through this. That's the way some of the policymakers under Mr. Armstrong had things going. So I was in the corner at the table with about three or four other tables around me and people working on the correspondence courses and so on. And when I wanted to get, all I had was a pencil and a piece and a pad. And if I wanted to get anything typed, I kind of really had to beseech the woman in charge of the typing pool, you know, could I please get this letter typed? See, I wasn't used to this. See, I wasn't used to it. But God helped my attitude by remembering some poetic wisdom. And that was, the best that one can do for his land is the works that lie under his nose. with the tools that lie under his hands. And that encouraged me. Hey, I'm going to do it. If I don't have the tools, I'm still going to do it. And the Marine Corps motto helped also, do the best you can with what you got. And that's the way God judges things today. Best you can with what you got. See, I began to see a caste system here. A caste. It didn't stem. It stemmed from a certain manager that had the idea of rank. See, in 1 Corinthians 12:28, they felt that it was rank. Rank. If you were apostle, it was top rank. Evangelist was second rank. And pastor was third rank. And if you had that rank, you see, it was like a pecking order. It was a pecking order of almost pride. It wasn't the best thing to do, and I'm glad to see the United Church today doesn't follow that. When you're ordained an elder. You're ordained an elder. Now, Mr. Greider has authority, has a higher authority given to him to help run the church. You see, that's needed within the church, obviously, but it's not rank. As Mr. McNair tried to, and again, Mr. McNair is another one of the deceased ministers who are very loyal, very dedicated. He says it's like so many yellow pencils. See, all elders, all dedicated to serving the flock, serving God. So the church is not, our church does not view it that way today. And another problem came up with was teaching was the idea of Paul writing to Timothy. He says, Timothy, don't let anyone despise your youth. You see, now that was kind of brought home with the idea, therefore, when some of these students got to be seniors, that was it. They knew everything. You see, they didn't have one day's experience in the world, but they knew it all. Don't let anybody despise your youth, okay? And I remember going out on a donation with a farmer. He wanted to, had this big, massive farm. I mean, it was huge. And he was just a big, burly guy. You know, overhauls. I come in the dining room, you know, I sit down. He plunks in the chair, boom. Well, Mr. Helge, I suppose you're going to tell me, too, how to run my farm. You see, that was the error. They'd send out these young students, and they'd say, oh, well, no, you're going to do that. Here's the way you have to do it now, and here's the way you should plow your fields, and here's the way you should plant your corn, and here's the way you should harvest it. You see, I said, oh, no, sir, no, sir. I said, the only experience I have on a farm is walking barefoot through a cow field and sometimes misplacing my steps where I step and going over to the creek with my BB gun and shooting frogs. I said, that's the extent of my farm experience. No, if I want to talk about farming, I'd come to you, and I would ask you, how do I farm? See, that's got us off on the right foot. That got us off on the right foot. But those were just some of the problems. Then, again, this is to bring home the human side of the church. You understand? God was there working. He was working through humans. There was one minister... I won't mention his name. He's deceased also. He's always get up there and he kind of blasts lawyers. You know, every time we come to the scripture, the lawyer said, the lawyer. And the lawyer probably had this Chicago twang. You see? You know, and, you know, how many lawyers in the congregation were from Chicago? You know? You know, so this really kind of got under my skin one time. And I just said, you know, I'm not going to take this baloney anymore. I'm just going to get up and I'm going to walk out of here. That's it. Then the thought, God put the thought in my mind of what Jesus said to Peter. Peter, where would you go? Lord, where would we go? You know, Jesus said, are you going to leave? And Peter said, where would we go? And God put that thought in my mind. I thought, that's it. Why should I leave? I'm not going to leave. No, I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to put up with this. He's not going to drive me out, see? So that helped me to overcome an attitude problem. Next time I was a little disappointed, I remember, and I thought, you know, here's the broadcast, and all they're talking about is evolution, and, you know, things are just going on and on every day. And so I open up the paper, and what do I see on page 10? 10 nations forming in Europe. Now you see, the church was the only one preaching this. Everybody else thought, this is ridiculous. They're never going to come together. It's not going to happen. This is preposterous what you're preaching. See, and here it was happening. And this brought right to my eyes, big black letters, it is coming to pass, just what Mr. Armstrong was preaching. So that, again, encouraged me, hold tight, stay fast, do what you were called to do, you see. Then I noticed, when I first got out there, Mr. Armstrong's name was on every label. It was on every letter that went out. It was on everything you could see, everything. Herbert W. Armstrong, World Tomorrow, or Herbert W. Armstrong, Ambassador College, World Tomorrow, Worldwide Church, got Herbert Armstrong. I thought, you know, this is just, I got a little feeling. Didn't think about it, just came to my mind. It's a little bit overdone. Just a little bit overdone. But then I learned from his experience. You see, why did he do that? Because when he was in Oregon and he would establish a church and he would leave, and the minister, the one who was appointed to take, would steal the congregation. They'd steal the church. They'd steal the congregation from him. He could never build anything. He learned he had to keep power. He had to keep control. And so I learned the lesson from him. So then when they drafted corporate documents, to redo all the corporate documents, because the old ones had a much different approach than what the doctrine was, insofar as this fellowshipping was concerned. And that was going to be a problem. So we smashed those, redid them all, giving Mr. Armstrong full power, full authority, full control. And that served very, very well under the different attacks that we had. And it worked well to protect him. Now, of course, when things went south and other people got in control, it kind of worked as a two-edged sword, right? But that's the way it was. And then one day, Mr. Armstrong came into the dining hall. Again, this was a house, and he had a patio out there, a balcony, and there was a few of his students there at the time. So he would come down and he would chat, and he took us out in the balcony. And he said, now, you see over there? And he pointed to all these vacant lots, to all this dirty track, and to all these shacks. He says, now, over there, that's where there's going to be a student dormitory. We need that for the students, where they can have dinner, they can have their dances, they can have their parties. Now, over here, we're going to have a professional track. You're going to have that where they can run around. And underneath is going to be a parking structure. And then next to that's going to be a gymnasium, a professional basketball court, and an Olympic-sized swimming pool. That's going to be over on this side here. And then we're going to have this student center over to this place. Now we're over in this spot. He's pointing them all out. We're going to have the administration building. And then he says, and there in this section is going to be the house of God. Now you see, Mr. Armstrong was somewhat haunted. He was haunted by the message in Haggai. In Haggai, God said, look, when you leave here, you're going to go and live in your house. He says, but my house lies in ruins. See? And he thought of David. David saying, hey, I live in a house of cedar, a beautiful house. But God lives in a tent. He's in a tent. You see? So those thoughts pressed him. He wanted to build that house of God. That drove him. He wanted to do that first, but he couldn't. We had to not build the house of God first, because we had to put up the gymnasium, because the freeway was coming through, and it was going to go right through the center of the campus. So by putting up the gymnasium, it caused him to move it over, and it kept the property more contiguous. So he was driven by that. And he said, then down the middle of this campus, we're going to have a stream. And the stream's going to go flowing. It'd be representative of God's Holy Spirit. And then we're going to have a radio broadcast go around the world. The plain truth is going to come out in full color. Now, all this sounded good. But again, in my mind, without thinking about it, just comes, how are we going to pay for all of this? We don't have money to pay. We don't have a pot, as we should say in Chicago, right? We don't have it. We're not even getting money to the people who are working. And you got these big, grandiose plans, okay? So it was a little bit, a little odd to me. Because furthermore, a lot of this property he was pointing to, we didn't own. It was owned by other people, individual people. So I thought, well, that's fine. I mean, I didn't think about it too much one way or the other, but how is it going to come to pass? But that was Mr. Armstrong's dream, okay? Martin Luther, remember he said, I have a dream. This was Mr. Armstrong's dream plus, dream plus. And then time went by, and gradually, you see, I witnessed the purchase of those shacks. I witnessed the purchase of this property coming together in kind of a square. I witnessed the construction, brick by brick, as well as others, of course. Brick by brick, the student dorms, the gymnasium, yes, a professional-sized court, like he said. Yes, an Olympic-sized swimming pool. The student center, two stories with dining up on top for executive dining and down below for the students where they could have their parties and all. The administration building where we get to work out. And then finally, Mr. Armstrong's dream, the house of God. And he dug that first shovel full. He wanted to do that, to turn it over, to get that built. And then, last, the stream. And I remember the night they pushed the button and the pump started and the water came cascading down all through the campus and into the ponds that you can go over and see today. So his dream plus came to pass. I witnessed it come to pass. I witnessed the plain truth go from minimal amount to 8 million, 8 million. Ask anybody who's putting out a magazine and say, what's your circulation? And they will probably call you a liar if you say you knew an organization that had a magazine with 8 million circulation. Power, power. Even today, or a few months past, few years past, when I would talk to lawyers, I would say, well, I'm representing this church now. I need your help in this state and that state. Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember my grandmother. I remember my grandfather. I remember my parents hearing that voice in the radio, getting that plain truth. I remember my grandmother. She would say, you kids, sit down and be quiet because Mr. Armstrong's coming on. So that's what happened. That went out. And the dream was filled in the broadcast. And I remember one day, we had a special event at the student area where they met. They had a little party, and they had a globe. And on that globe, with a little light, was inside. They fixed it up, and it was blinking in Luxembourg. And that's when the broadcast first went out in Europe. And they said that was 19 time cycles, as I understand it, from the time that Paul went to Europe as well. So it grew. You see, it grew from the radio church of God. See, that's all it was, the radio church of God. That's what he started. And then finally, you know, begin to say, well, radio, that's all you got. You don't have churches even. So finally they changed the name, and that's the reason they changed it, Worldwide Church of God, because it's gotten to be, now it grew into a worldwide work. And the TV and the radio got to be the largest, number one, for a while in the U.S. Now, the church was not perfect. This is going to take me, I have to cut this shorter and maybe finish it up some other time. But the church was not perfect. You see, so first of all, I want to say, you see, it wasn't a dream that Mr. Armstrong had only. It wasn't a pipe dream. He had formulated a concrete plan. You see, a concrete plan of what he had in mind and what he was going to do. And he did it. That was a man of conviction that with the help and power of God, he brought it to pass from nothing to where it was a worldwide work. That's the thing that convinced me there's a God working within the church. And God honored it. Now, the church was not perfect. Then times changed as we grew. Soon, a financial officer that was a very important individual, he just got all of a sudden frightened. He started to take some accounting courses, and then pretty soon he began to ask questions. What's going to happen about the books here, and what's this, and what's that? And pretty soon he went to Mr. Armstrong and said, Mr. Armstrong, in 3 months, this work is going to collapse. It's going to collapse, and we're going to have police up here, and the FBI, and the IRS agents, and they're going to be arresting. We won't be able to pay our debts. It'll be fraud. And Mr. Look, if you need money into the work here, let me know and I'll write a co-worker letter. See, that was the solution. He'd write a co-worker, the money would come in. But no, this man was set on it. He was so fearful, so sure it was going to collapse in 3 months, he left the work. And when he left, he went to the newspaper, as we say, spilled his guts. This is what's going to happen there. It's all going to collapse and so on. And of course, it didn't come to pass. These are the things that happen when you're dealing with human beings. Now then also, you see, church is not perfect. There were some ministers in the field got word there were problems with one. So remember, we're just talking a few. We're talking a few only. But some would take third tithe, have a widow. Widow, you need $300 here. Here's your $300. That's a loan. The widow would pay it back. And where would the money go? Went into the minister's pocket. It didn't go back into the fund. See, this was one person, at least that I know of. And others were probably doing some of the same things. But only a few. One man was taking donations. He had a donation. Some man wanted to give property, big piece of property. Oh, yeah, I'll take it. Make the deed to me. Make the deed to me. So later, this guy keeps saying, where's my donation receipt? What do you mean, donation receipt? Well, I gave this property. Well, look at the files. Did we lose this file? What's this? I don't remember this. So finally, the story comes out. He gave the deed in the minister's name. The minister sold the property, started a business that went south right away, right? Kaplunk. Lost all the man's money. And, of course, it turned the man off. We couldn't give him a donation receipt. We didn't get the property. And it caused just a lot of trouble, and probably with God too. Then there was some improper conduct, which I won't even describe. And one day I had to fly around to different churches to talk to witnesses about somebody's minister's conduct. And in the process, one of the witnesses I'm talking to, a man, he gets agitated. Why are you worried about only that? What about our minister? What do you mean? What about him? You know, to tell me. I had a tape recorder going and everything else. What? Well, every Sunday, we must go to his house, wash the dishes, wash the windows, cut the grass, clean the house, demanded of us by God through him. You know, these things had to be corrected. And I happen to know that minister, after he left, was put out, we got a phone call. I want to get $25,000. Well, for what? Because I have a suitcase full of tapes that I made with Garner Ted Armstrong. I would call him, I would tape the conversations, and I have this suitcase full of tapes. If you don't give me $25,000, I'm going to take it to the paper. Fine, take it to the paper. See? And obviously, who's going to sit and listen to a suitcase full of tapes, right? So, the man could have been, as another story we'll go through later here, could have been arrested for extortion, you see. But that wasn't done. But I'm just saying there was the human element in the church. And it had its good sides and it had its bad sides. Then we had some big problems. But I think church ends at 4:30, right? Is that right? So it's around there, Mr. Fish is saying. But I got too many notes here to keep going. I don't want to keep you over. I'll just split this up and finish it up another time with the big problems that occurred that we had to address, and how the transition came, what Mr. Armstrong had to say about his death and how he wanted things passed, and exactly what occurred. And so we'll pick that up next time.